When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
Beatles, Let It Be, single goes to number one, stays there for 2 weeks. A song that needs a little introduction. It's almost, it almost has a hymnal tone to it, almost a spiritual, it's such a powerful ballad. According to McCartney, it's a positive song owing to its inspiration. One night when he said he was paranoid and anxious, he had a dream where he saw his mother, who'd been dead for a decade. She came to him in his time of trouble, speaking words of wisdom that brought him much peace when he needed it. It was this dream that got him to begin writing the song. It almost does have a hymnal feel to it, doesn't it, Stephen?
Yes, well, of course, as soon as you hear that Mother Mary, of course, you're going to be headed in that direction. And it has those Liverpool lads had a lot of timeless wisdom to share.
Yeah, you're a Beatles fan, Zoe?
Oh, I grew up on the Beatles with OG vinyls from my mum. I'm still not allowed to touch them now.
Really?
Yeah.
I just love it. I just love the song. But John Lennon, he didn't like it. He said, "That's Paul. What can you say? Nothing to do with the Beatles. It could have been Wings."
Such a great song.
Yeah,
it is. It's what I needed right now. Thank you. Well, I appreciated that. It's what I needed.
You. Well, tell you what, Zoe, here's something for you. I'm going to read this out because it is for you. This is from Kirsten. Zoe, your sports journalism has become a language for our whānau. Our daughter is an emerging professional athlete. The non-obvious, massively important issues in this for a woman are imperative for our sports consuming community. Tell us how to support you. That's Kirsten there, so you've got some support there.
Thank you so much, Kirsten. I'm like crying again now. So thank you so much. Just please, what you can do is continue to engage with my work, to read stories about women in sport, follow your favourite athletes on social media, turn up to the games, volunteer for clubs, stand for a board. The thing is, you know, with me going, stuff not having any women in the sports department, with News Hub going and the number of female sports journalists going there, our numbers are diminishing rapidly. And I am, you know, our future for women in sports journalism is very, very uncertain. Mm. So please support us, read our stories, engage with us, like follow us on Instagram or whatever it is. But thank you so much. I really appreciate your beautiful words.
6:37. Wallace, shout out to my dog, Tui, who was sleeping in the shed tonight after rolling in something very, very stinky. Although she absolutely reeks tonight, she's a great mongrel. We love her. Another one here. I love our cat, Boichi, even more because after 5 cats and decades of maintaining he doesn't like cats, I've derived immense pleasure from watching my husband become totally enthralled by our gorgeous cat. Amanda says, Wallace, we have a beautiful rabbit, age 10, called Blackie. He loves like a cat, has the full range of the house and loves to sit in my lap in the evening, loved by the whole family. Another one here. My cat is called Peppercorn Evil. She's a 13-year-old beautiful fluffy tabby. I love her because she's so nasty. It is funny. So a homage to your pet on National Pet Day today. And a lot regarding whether or not you support cancer labels on alcohol. So we'll try and get some of that in the show as well. But time for I've Been Thinking. Stephen Jacoby, take it away.
Yeah, Wallace, well, I've been thinking about the law of unintended consequences when it comes to these budget cuts and what have you. Do you know that the Hawke's Bay Regional Council is cutting funding to tourism Hawke's Bay. Now, what if the unintended consequence is in fact a drop in the number of tourists coming to our beautiful region and spending their money here? Now, of course, there are a lot of demands for funding, particularly in Hawke's Bay after the cyclone. There are difficult decisions to be made. I'm glad I'm not making any of them. And the same is true at the national level. We have to balance the books. But what is the unintended consequence of cutting funding for trade, for example, when we need to boost exports to stimulate the economy? And indeed, what effect do back office cuts have on the frontline delivery of services? This isn't an easy situation, but what I'm saying is let's think carefully before we cut.
Kia ora, Stephen. I've been thinking there. All right, Zoe, George, I've been thinking.
Okay, I've been thinking about more positive things than just being all of redundancies. TEDx Wellington is happening this weekend at Rutherford House at Vic University in Wellington. And I've been part of the curation and coaching team, and we have a lineup of 11 incredible, inspiring, thought-provoking speakers, along with a marketplace full of startups and innovative companies, and an opportunity to network with a whole bunch of interesting people. As a former TEDx speaker, my talk, which is called The Movement, How to Smash the Cistern and Unclog the Bogs, which is about toilet equity and changing equity in sport, I'm really pleased to give back to my community in a really positive way. Tickets are still available, TEDxWellington.com. Would love to see you there, and I hope that you leave the conference feeling uplifted empowered.
My first question is, what is a TEDx?
TED Talk. It's like a TED. Do you know what a TED Talk is?
Not really.
My TED Talk.
I've seen the logo. Is it like a 10-minute speech?
It's a talk. Well, they range in time from anywhere between 5 to 20 minutes, 18 minutes, and they cover a whole bevy of different subjects. We have a musician playing. We've got people talking about mental health.
But is it a particular style of talking?
Well, no, we're trying to get rid of that traditional Kia ora, I'm Zoe, welcome to my TED Talk sounding very polished and a bit boring. It's more fluid than that now. Our speakers are incredible, and I cannot wait to see them on stage and meet everyone there as well, because I'm going to be there. My TED Talk is one of the most popular in New Zealand, which kind of cracks me up, which is about toilets, my favourite subject, which I can talk about for hours. But that was part of a big movement that did see equity for particularly girls and women during our major World Cups, better changing rooms in which female athletes didn't have to queue for the toilet in their own changing rooms anymore, better toilets for our clubs and hubs during our football World Cups. So, you know, that talk flowed on. Sorry, can't talk about the dunny without being punny. There was a big flow-on effect from that. So I was really proud of that work, and I'm glad to give back and can't wait for Saturday.
18 to 7, the panel, RNZ National. And to this, one small sentence in the National New Zealand First Coalition Agreement could make a big difference to the development of Papakainga and overcrowding issues. It proposes removing the need for consent for dwellings less than 60 square metres in size instead of an engineer's report, which is all that would be needed. New Zealand First Deputy Leader and Minister of Regional Development Shane Jones said it was intended to address granny flats. He said it is, quote, a practical response to the large number of Kiwis in their 60s who will require rental accommodation. He also said the change would benefit iwi, who had land, wanted to expand. With us, Professor John Tukey, AUT School of Future Environments. Professor Tukey, welcome.
Good evening.
On first read, I thought this is pretty significant, actually, because, you know, it has been an impediment for many who want to build that granny flat out the back, and they've got to, you know, go through, oh my gosh, all these rings, you know, all the red tape and loopholes. But you also don't want a whole suburb of substandard dwellings out the back, John.
Well, you pretty much nailed it there. I mean, the bottom line is, it's all very well saying, well, we build what we want, it's 60 square metres, it's no big deal. But actually, there's minor issues. You heard the previous talker talking about toilets. You know, okay, where are you going to put all the toilet waste? Where are you going to put all the stormwater runoff? Where are you going to put... What about the sight lines associated with the harbour and blah, blah, blah? All the other things associated with living in a medium to high density location are going to come into bear, and you know the devil's going to be in the detail of making this work.
So there are some of the downsides. I guess some of the upsides, John, is it's addressing a need and also a generational need when the likes of, say, your mum or your grandmother does need a place to live, come and live with you for a while, build a, hopefully, a quality flat out the back.
Well, you're not going to see me arguing against it from a conceptual level. I've got no problem with that. As I say, the problem comes down to literally the logistics of actually making something like this fly. Mm. If you're going to go in this space, fine, let's do this. But there are going to be some rules about it as far as what can and can't be built in, where it can and can't be built. There's a difference between RMA land use, can you use the land in a particular way, and then the other aspects when you talk about the quality of the build, which is around consents related to construction, and that currently there are delimits associated with the use of the 35 square meter limit associated with not requiring consent, but you still have to build it to code, which means that you actually need to get a sign off by a licensed building practitioner, all the other things you need to do to confirm the fact that the actual quality of what you build is to current code. So there's some big issues associated with this. It's a headline grabbing, but it doesn't mean to say that it's in any way, shape or form deliverable in its entirety.
Very interesting. Stephen Jacoby.
Well, Wallace, and thanks, John, for those comments, because I was thinking about this is what I said earlier about the law of unintended consequences. You know, the unintended consequence might be that we have a lot of granny sheds rather than granny flats, which probably wouldn't be such a great idea.
Yeah.
But what's the magic about 60 square meters anyway? And why has 60 square meters been chosen? Do you know?
It's a number that's pulled out of the air. I mean, in fairness, 60 square meters is actually not a bad size. If you look at standard construction parameters around the OECD countries around the world, we're actually sitting in the upper percentiles associated with the total size of construction. So our average house tends to be quite large compared to the rest of the developed world. By contrast, the UK is quite significantly different. So our average floor area for the average house is a couple of hundred square meters. If you go to the UK, you're actually talking about 75 to 80 square meters for the average dwelling size. So there's a huge difference there, right? Do we actually need to build smaller homes with a lower footprint that provides affordable outcomes? Hell yes, absolutely. There's no question about that. But I'm not necessarily sure that a carte blanche go for broke, away you go, big boy, is necessarily the way to go.
Oh, Zoe.
There's also the question,
Sorry,
just briefly.
Yeah.
Let Zoe get a word in edgeways. There's also the question about the need to look at some of these procedures that are required for approval of constructions and dwellings, aren't there? Because there are lots of comments about that, about the time and the cost associated with that can be a disincentive.
Now, Zoe.
Yeah, I do kind of find it mildly entertaining that we're calling 60 square metre homes, granny flats and cottages, because I live in a 60 square metre cottage home.
Oh, you do?
I do. And do you know what? It's big enough for me and my cat that we can talk about later, and it's small, so it's easy to clean. It's cheaper to heat. I've got a little carport. I've got a little shed. Like, it suits me just fine. But I guess, if we're going to go down this path, then, John, are we going to need to change the code?
I don't necessarily think building code is the issue. I mean, there is going to be changes and there's going to be a revision to the RMA at the moment. The problem, as I say, is going to be in the detail associated with this, because all you got to do is picture in your mind the RMA is going to be split up into three different blocks of legislation. Now, the question I will put to you is this. Let's imagine we've got the largest single piece of legislation on the books. It's a huge document associated with RMA. We're going to split it up into three bits. And then we get our various different civil servants getting stuck in and the politicians and all the rest of it. When you stack up the three new pieces of legislation, are they going to be bigger or smaller than the legislation that they replace? And my suspicion is that they're going to be somewhat bigger, because this is how it always works when we're dealing with civil servants dealing with legislation. It's not going to be as easy, and it's not going to be as throwaway as, all right, 60 square meters, go for it. I can't see that.
Watch the space. Really interesting stuff, John. Kia ora. Thank you for your time this evening. That's Professor John Tukey from the AUT School of Future Environments. Yeah, I don't mind a small footprint too. So in fact, I lived in a little what you call an old style workman's cottage, from the 50s for many years, a little cottage in Auckland. Just loved it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I'm very, very fortunate that I own my home for now, but I have way too many houseplants and not enough room. It's the only downside of having a small house. But, I really like it. I live in a really beautiful part of Wellington. I'm really close to the city.
Yes.
And, so I'm quite happy.
It works
for you. It works for me. Mm. It's, and I've worked really, really hard for that. I quite like being in a small little house. I've got a little garden as well, which I potter in,
love it. Just love it. No, yeah, I'm hearing just what you're putting down. So 10 to 7, the panel, NZ National. You get the National Pet Day. Keep those coming in. We're talking about a homage to your pet, that dog on the back of the ute, or that cat that curls up in your lap while you listen to the panel. 2101. What's its name? Why do you love it? But to this, should Olympic champions be offered prize money? Just a brief word on this. Well, athletics has become the first sport to offer prize money to Olympic champs, announcing that the 48 gold medalists in Paris this year will earn $50,000 each US to end a 128-year tradition. Athletics president Sebastian Co said, President, while it's impossible to put a marketable value on winning a medal, it is important we make sure some of the revenues generated by our athletes are directly returned to those who make the games the spectacle that it is. Is it a sellout, is what I want to ask you, Zoe.
Is it a sellout? No, I don't think it is. I think it's, so I can see both sides of the story here, right? I think it's incredibly smart of athletics, global athletics, to do this, because it means that there is a pathway for people to earn money within the sport. Our athletes do not get paid very well, and we're expecting them to win us gold medals. So to have that incentive is really great. And then when new people think about what sport they might want to take up, then that could be an incentive to them. On the flip side, there's research into showing who are the happiest people when it comes to medals, and I really worry about the mental health of silver medalists in this. Bronze medalists are actually quite happy, they're just happy to be on the podium, but silver medalists, they are not in a good way because they became so close. So by having that $50,000 sort of dollars incentive to try and get that gold medal and then missing out by it could be a split second, gutting. So please look after our silver medalists as well. That would be really nice. But we do not pay our athletes enough.
Brief response, Stephen?
Oh, I defer to Zoe on this one.
Yeah. Very good.
And what she said sounds very sensible.
All right. So there you go. Olympic champs. Wonderful, wonderful responses this evening. Thank you so much. And also a lot on what Ireland's doing in 2 years' time. They're going to be putting a big red warning on the links of cancer and alcohol. Cancer warnings on all alcoholic drinks. Absolutely no justification for hiding the facts. Why is it such a big no-no, says someone, to be required to state the truth containers of alcohol? Are the objectors really such wusses they have to deny realities? Another one says, I don't understand why anyone would be opposed to labelling alcohol as the carcinogen it is. Are people so hell-bent on lying? And just on that, we did reach out to the New Zealand Alcohol Beverages Council, and their full statement is, the New Zealand Alcohol Beverages Council does not support more labelling on products. The research on warning and advice labels is that while these help to raise issues, they do not change drinking behaviours. The labelling does not take into account the difference between responsible and hazardous drinking. The best place to get any information on any health concerns is from your doctor. So thanks for all your responses on that particular subject. I'm sure you'll hear more. Finally, today is National Pet Day, and a survey recently commissioned by Companion Animals New Zealand reiterated what we really already knew, that Kiwis love their pets. According to them, 4.35 million pets of many species are in our homes. At least 40% of households have at least one cat. 34% of us own dogs. With us is animal welfare scientist and a director at Companion Animals NZ, Professor Nat Warren. Welcome to the program.
Kia ora, Wallace, and the panel, and happy National Pet Day.
Oh. Yay!
a positive note, and actually, quite frankly, Nat, it is positive, isn't it? Because from first-hand experience, I have inadvertently realised the joy I get when I walk in the door and the little Yorkshire Terrier I have, Banjo, runs up to me and wants me to give him a pat.
You see, and that's what people love, just like Banjo. You know, people get comfort from their pets. Their pets are their best friends, their playmates. There's so many benefits that we know we have from sharing our lives with these wonderful animals. But, of course, we need to make sure that it's not a one-way street, that just as they give us joy, that we're making sure that we provide them with the best quality of life that we can. And that's what we're trying to promote amongst all pet owners. We know that you love your pets, but we want to make sure that you understand what it looks like from a pet's perspective, and, you know, understand your pet's emotions and the fact that they do feel emotions, and that those emotions are sometimes different from us, and they're very much related to things that are important to those different species that we love to be with.
Stephen.
So that's what we're doing. Yeah.
Stephen Jacoby.
Well, we don't have any pets, but we have ourselves, but our children both do. And we have two lovely little dogs, Charlie and Fuji, and we have come to love them a lot. And I must say, they were both with us at different times during the COVID lockdown, and we really saw the value of a relationship with a pet during that time, and are very grateful for that.
Stay there, Nat. Zoe?
Yeah, I have a rehomed ragdoll called Frank, and if I was at home in my home studio, I'd bring him in, and he's very chatty. He's got these big blue eyes, and actually last year he was featured in the Sunday magazine, which was quite lovely. But I think that he's relatively happy. I brush him every day, which he seems to enjoy. I play with him quite a bit. We have snuggles, particularly at 3 a.m. when he thinks it's feeding time. I think he's good. He's got his little friends who come to visit as well, the next door neighbours' cats, which is quite lovely. They'll play together. It's very cute.
Just some more of your wonderful responses honouring your pets. Tofu, the one-eyed rescue rabbit, a New Zealand white who languished in the SPCA for months, now happily free range in our rabbit-proof Auckland home. Another one, my cat, Meow Meow. I had him after my stroke. He knows when I'm down or angry, and he lets me sleep even when he's hungry. Oh gosh, those are just such beautiful responses, Nat. Finally, what do we need to know about making sure that our pet is comfortable and happy, Nat?
Yeah. Well, very quickly, I mean, their quality of life obviously matters to all of the people that have spoken today and many, many more. But there are people who know that their pet could be happier. Sometimes it's difficult for them to provide for everything for their animal. But I think it is important that we share that message, that as long as we're striving to make our pets happy, that we're reducing the things that they find that make them unhappy or fearful, that we're spending time with them and interacting with them, and not just using food as the way to make them happy, because that has its own problems. That their quality of life should be extremely good. It matters to all of us. It matters to them.
Wonderful. What a And take them out on a walk.
Take your dog for a walk. It's very good for you as well. But remember that if it's an older dog, it might prefer a sniffy walk rather than a running walk. So think about the individual that you've got in your life and cater for them.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend trying to walk a cat on a leash. It's just very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Hey, know that you can do wonderful things with cats. You can, you know, provide them with a whole enriched environment with all the toys that are out there.
Love it. Oh, Professor Nat Warren, lovely to end on that note. Happy National Pet Day to all of you. Zoe, George, Stephen Jacoby, kia ora to you both. Fantastic show. I'm Wallace Chapman. Stick around. I'll be with you till 8 here on RNZ National.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.